Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, and Cynthia McClure is here with us. She's engineering. Thank you for joining us to listen in. Brief look at the weather. Despite the pleasant sun that we're having today, it should be a pretty wet week with rain tonight, Tuesday night, and even possibly up until Wednesday. Thursday is expected to be sunny, but by Friday it looks cloudy again with possible return to showers. Today's high is 73, but temperatures should generally be in the 60s until they get back up in the 70s on Thursday when the sun should be returning to us. Pat Schlarbaum is also here with us. Pat works for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and this is his last week. He's retiring after 32 years of services, and the Des Moines Register wrote a story about him on May 19th, saying Pat Schlarbaum was a key figure in helping fill the Iowa skies with raptors that were long gone. But the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Wildlife Diversity Program technician is retiring and won't be replaced thanks to budget shortfalls. The DNR's budget slashed nearly in half from 2009 to its fiscal year 2018 appropriation of $11.2 million, prompted DNR Director Chuck Gipp to say this week that state parks could close if managers retire. A less heralded loss is already occurring, positions that won't be filled by other retiring employees such as Schlarbaum. Pat, at 65, will retire after 32 years as a wildlife diversity technician and after his last public event on Saturday when he will thank partners who helped return nesting osprey to the state. Pat?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere, so I'll still be around. Still ain't dead yet.
You had your last public event on Saturday, and you were thanking partners who helped return ospreys to the state.
Yeah, it was just a great gathering. In 2015, a pair of ospreys discovered some waters just off the interstate, just south at Colfax and Highway 117, and the Martin Marietta donated to the city of Colfax. They have like a few hundred acres of a park with water. It was a big mining area, and the ospreys are enjoying the fish because it would flood from the Skunk River. So it's a nice central location for inviting all our partners from around the state.
2 weeks ago, you were on KHOY, and you gave a description of the osprey for anybody listening who doesn't know what an osprey is.
A fish hawk or a fish eagle.
Cynthia, could you play that description that Pat gave last week?
They're the ones that drop out of the sky and get fish, whereas a bald eagle would kind of skim the surface and snatch a fish. These birds will just plummet. They target a fish that's close to the surface. They don't swim underwater. A fish that's close to the surface would be vulnerable. And they're white from underneath, so the fish really doesn't see what's coming. But when they bring down those talons with nature's finest fish hooks, and when they hit the water, it's a pretty loud retort. I mean, it's a smack. And then you'll see the water sort of twitching, and this bird has opened up its wings, and they have a double joint so that they can kind of push down and hop away from the water. And if a 4-pound bird will have a 2-pound fish, and you think, mathematically, this isn't happening. And the fish is alive. So this whole thing, they push down and hop up out of the water, and they'll get a stroke in. And, of course, the bird's wringing wet, you know, so it's a 4-pound bird with, I don't know, half a pound of water maybe. And they'll take a stroke and another powerful stroke. And about the fourth one, they're up high enough to where they can kind of start wringing the water away like a dog would, you know. And the water's just flying, these diamondized droplets. And you got this bird with a fish that's obviously trying to disentangle itself from the talons. And this bird is flying off with a fish. And they have another anatomical feature at that point where the 3-in-1, usually raptors or most birds, they have 3 toes and then a helix or the rear talon. But an osprey can swivel, and rather than be 3-in-1, they can swivel one of the talons and make it 2-by-2. So then they're clamped. But rather than carry the fish perpendicular to their flight direction, they'll line it up so that it's like torpedo style, so that there's less wind resistance. And this is happening while the fish is trying to disentangle itself. And sometimes it'll only have it by one talon, and, you know, and it's trying to get the other talon on it. And, of course, then there's another osprey or an eagle in the area saying, oh, there's a fish, defend it to get up to the perch. And after a while, you're looking at this osprey then, you know, eating its fish. Wow, what did I just see? But people can see ospreys now. When in 85, there was some summering in Iowa, but it was necessary for there to spread their population that was basically centered in upper Wisconsin and an area near Deerwood, Minnesota, where they're sharing their ospreys with us. So we started bringing ospreys to Iowa as young birds before they were flightless. There was a relocation of these young ospreys. And our partners then would take care of four or five and release them. And we were able to achieve successful nesting of surviving ospreys in Iowa in 2003. And since that time, but there's going to be 26 or 27 nests this year. There's webcams. People can see the if they go to the Iowa DNR Osprey Cam, you can see some that are nesting in Iowa now. 11 sites, 11 different key partners. And we're going to have a big thank you for all the partners. May 20th at Colfax, Iowa. So we've got something in Iowa where the northern areas, the wild areas, are being shared. We get a bit of that wildness. So May 20th, we're going to thank all the partners. And part of the work has involved Chief Golden Light Eagle with the Yankton Nation. He would come and do blessings for the Red Rock birds when we were there in, like, late 2000s, 2006 and 2007. And he was here 4 years. And that's kind of established a friendship with him. And so he's going to come and be a part of the thank you.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And that is Pat Schlaubaum describing the return of the osprey to Iowa and the work that many people did. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Pat, you mentioned partners that were being honored. Can you give a description of how many people actually were involved in the effort to bring the ospreys to Iowa?
There were 70 or so that came for a picnic lunch. And there are literally hundreds, maybe thousands of Iowans now that have been volunteering and supporting and were recognized. We gave everybody a wildlife plaque and noting the years that they had contributed.
A big diversity of people. It was all the way from people who just volunteered to help with feeding the birds to somebody from the Minnesota Power Company all the way from Duluth.
That's Bill Frondorf. And he was our source. You know, you have to do these things.
To be clear, what Pat is referring to is that the Minnesota Power Company provided equipment, and once a year at least, if not more, once a year, there'd be an excursion up to Minnesota to find baby birds and to take one of those baby birds and bring them down to Iowa to grow up here in Iowa.
Yeah, we did it in such a way that we would meet all their biological needs. We could feed them as opposed to the adults. And so they weren't imprinted on people. But each year there was a gathering. But see, their company was exhibiting an environmental conscience. They would, rather than fight these ospreys that were nesting on their power lines, they would put a pole and work with these birds. And it was huge. And that was our source of birds. For Bill to come down, it really touched a lot of people's hearts. He's a great...
It was a real interesting collection of people. I wanted to play some of their voices, what this meant to them. The recording starts out with a recording of Chief Golden Light Eagle, who you referred to earlier, and your description of how the chief got involved.
Chief Golden Light Eagle from the Ihumtawan Nation, Greenwood, South Dakota. Of course he knew about ospreys, and of course he was missing them in their stretch of the Missouri River, and he was also encouraging, if you can do this in Iowa, maybe we can do this in South Dakota. When I asked him for involvement, he said, I'll get back to you on that. Next morning he called and said, just to let you know, we had ceremony in a sweat lodge that the eagles are going to welcome your ospreys back to Iowa. And the hawks
are going to welcome your ospreys back to Iowa. They should be placed in the headwaters of the watersheds. And then he said, but you've really got to do something about water quality. There, in fact, there's a red-tailed hawk flying over right now, and it's got a hole in his head and from the pollution. And I don't know if it's a metaphor. It doesn't matter. These are going to be ambassadors for clean water. And we embarked on a new partnership.
Chief Golden Night Eagle.
I was looking at that bird over there, and I was trying to get into his mind, you know, where he's nesting and where he's roosting. He's probably looking at all you guys down there. What are you guys doing? You know? And there's certain things that make us come together. Over here we have a relative. This relative has feathers that brought us all together as a family. A beautiful family. I look around, you know, I've never met a lot of, or seen any of you, but your hearts are all the same in the same place, you know, to help. And it's very beautiful. I really, really believe in all of you because we all have the same light within us. And I feel so bad at times because I've seen a picture of the only one remaining white rhino left on this world. You know, and with 5 or 6 armed guards around it, which ain't going to do them any good. When the whole race of rhino is going into extinction. And we're supposed to be really high intelligent people. And we got so many species that have gone down, you know, over the years. But with this one here, that's why I say I appreciate what you're doing on many, many levels, you know, whether it's out there in the field or, like, say, raising funds and donations and doing the legislative work to get this little beautiful bird back in order so we could enjoy it many, 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 many more years to come. So I appreciate everyone in here, your hearts and your efforts and your commitment and your dedication and to keeping one of our relatives, the bird people, alive and well today.
We made a song for the osprey, and it's that buffalo song. But instead of Tatanka Oyate, Sitan Hogan, fish hawk. Sitan Hogan.
Carolyn Ravensburger, and I'm the chair of the Iowa chapter of the Sierra Club. And, you know, we're here at this marvelous event, which is recognizing the changes in the natural world that have been brought about by the efforts of the Department of Natural Resources and the wild birds and raptors, the ospreys and others that Pat has been responsible for introducing, reintroducing back into Iowa and the wild. So if you're listening to this, what can you do in terms of being a guardian for these wild beings that share our world? We live in a state that used to be prairie pothole, and it's been so altered. It's been so damaged by both paving and plowing. So being in the most damaged state of the Union, we have the least amount of land that is in its natural condition. You know, to have restoration efforts like the ones that Pat was so instrumental in bringing about is key if we're going to have any kind of state, any kind of planet left.
I'm Barbara with White Rock Conservancy. We're part of a savanna ecosystem that doesn't exist in Iowa much anymore. One of the things people can see at White Rock are all of these different amazing birds that are flying around. They're a part of the whole ecosystem that happens there, and without them, we don't have that whole linkage that goes together. Sometimes it takes that little bit of human help to get them back there, but that it's there so that we can all experience these amazing creatures.
My name is Mike Hovlick. I'm with Dallas County Conservation. Currently, part of this was doing this osprey project. I got invited by Boone County to go up and get some of the birds, and Pat was already been up there because other counties were pulling down birds, and it's fun to connect on the osprey project there. And then I also know them through intentional way of living life that honors each other, honors the land, honors the earth. Professionally, spiritually, intellectually, there's a spiritual aspect to everything we're doing here. And I think, you know, professionally we work for government organizations or we work for nonprofits, and we're not allowed to acknowledge that. But everybody's got their ears way up to hear it because I think we're so hungry for it. Whether it's the peregrines or the osprey or the river otters, I mean, there's a spiritual aspect to what we do. And if we look at our ancestors, we look at what they put on the effigies on overlooking the Mississippi River. They had bears, they had peregrine falcons. I mean, these were animals that inspire us, that help us, take us up to the next level. It literally changes something inside you, and that's not something that we can't put in a monthly report, we can't put it in a year review, but I think it's something that we all, I think, quietly acknowledge, or maybe not, maybe later in life we may acknowledge that, but yeah, I think, yeah.
I'm Blair Lawson. I live in Warren County, and when the peregrine falcons were released in Des Moines, I worked just a block away from where they were released, and so when the end of the program came around, they still needed somebody to go put dead fish and water out on top of the Elsie Mesa Manor, and so I was the volunteer who did that. Went up to the top of Elsie Mesa Manor where they had a freezer, and they kept some old dead fish, you know, to be put out for the osprey chicks in case they weren't able to find any. And it was had already passed, you know, the act of participation of the DNR in that program. So now it was just up to volunteer citizens to kind of keep an eye on them and make sure they were fed and watered. And I went up with the Conservation Board people to northern Minnesota. They had a guy to climb up to the top of the trees and get two of the osprey chicks out and bring them down and band them. And then we stopped in Minneapolis and went to the University of Minnesota at the vet labs and had the birds checked out. You know, that was very interesting. Just a great once-in-a-lifetime type of thing to have done. Yeah. When the birds were brought down to the release site in Warren County, they let us all hold the birds, you know, before they took them up to the hack box.
The first osprey I ever saw, I was in the Boundary Waters, I don't know, 30 years ago. And it was raining, and we were in a canoe, and we watched an osprey go down and get a fish, you know. Or I can't remember if it actually got a fish, but it did dive into the water. And we were singing Rain by the Beatles while that was happening, because it was raining out. And I know Pat has talked to thousands of kids over the years and educated them about raptors and other things, wildlife, and it's huge. I'm proud of my kids because they do get it, and they love to be outside. They're not always stuck on video games and things like that. They understand the importance of that, and I'm a teacher, and I talk to my kids all the time about get your noses out of those video games and get outside, and getting outside.
The osprey were a blessing to Marion County. We've offered blessing of the birds. We've offered blessings of the osprey. and worked a lot with water quality education in Marion County, as you know, where Lake Red Rock is. The Jasper County Correctional Facility had a work release crew that worked for Elk Rock State Park. He adopted that crew to build a hack tower, and we only had 2 weeks to get it built before the birds came. It was a spur-of-the-moment kind of deal. Very intense. We worked through hot 90-degree days, weekends, 4th of July, and crew members that were there learned a very valuable lesson. Pat was so patient to go get them every day and to work with them, and their construction skills were incredible, but they learned about osprey, and they learned the spirituality of what we're trying to do with wildlife, and it gave them a whole different sense of what was happening in our environment. Well, during opening day of bird placement, we kind of had to lie a little bit and say, you know, those work release guys have to be there because if something would go wrong with that hack tower, we don't know how to fix it. And it kind of went through the Newton Correctional Facility as a pretty big deal. But that day, we really didn't know what was happening, and it was hot, and there was quite a crowd, and we allowed some of those work release crew members to place birds. And the tears welled up in their eyes, and they were so blessed. And that was the beginning of 7 years of releasing birds at Lake Red Rock. And I would lay down on the deck, watching underneath the door, and watch every movement that they made. And to be intimate with those birds 2.5 months out of every year for 7 years, that's just a little piece of life you can give back. It pulled a community together, fundraising, schools, photographers. So those little spiritual things kind of come around to be a part of this. This is just an amazing, amazing time.
You know, Polk County, we started releasing in 2000. We released for 5 years. I had the privilege of making a couple of trips up to collect birds and bring them back. What an honor, and talk about those spiritual experiences. You know, that first year we had 5 birds, and there's this one female, you know, she was just a little bit different than the rest of the birds. She was just a little more aggressive. She just had a little bit more fire in her eye. And sure enough, in 03, she's the bird that ended up over at McBride and was part of that first nesting pair here in the state. But, you know, I could see it in that bird. If any of them were going to make it, if any of them were going to survive, it was going to be that bird. And sure enough, she made it back. That female nested for 11 years. She fledged 24 young of her own, 3 of which we ended up rescuing in 08 from the flood. Last year we had 7 nesting pairs in Polk County. You keep your fingers crossed and you hope. And what a blessing to be a part of, you know, this fantastic raptor coming back to the state.
So I sit on the board of the Iowa Environmental Council, and I want to say thank you to Pat and the diversity program. Currently, we've got significant amount of waters on the impaired waters list. We're not going in the right direction with that. And so one thing that we've pushed at the legislative level, and I would encourage all of you, if you haven't talked to your legislative representatives, is the Outdoor Rec Trust Fund. And that's a fund that would provide, I think, probably close to 3 times the conservation funding that we have in this state on a regular basis now, on a consistent level. And that fund is constitutionally protected, so they couldn't go yank the money. And so I encourage you, you know, even though it's not the legislative season, you know, to contact your legislators and get out there and push them to fund the trust, because, you know, what it could do for programs like the diversity program, which I've had the opportunity to work kind of with a lot of those folks for over 10 years. You know, they're providing, you know, osprey, peregrine falcons, and eagles when we didn't have them before. You know, my boys are going to get to grow up and come out here and watch an osprey fish. And without the folks and the volunteers and the wildlife diversity program, that wouldn't be possible. And so, you know, I'd say keep up the fight. We can't give up. We need to do all that we can, because ultimately these natural resources are what can keep people in the state. Young people aren't going to want to live in a state where they can't take their kids out and have them go fish or go, you know, jump in, you know, the river. You know, I want my kids to play in the Skunk River. I don't want them to have to go to a pool. Thanks again to the Wildlife Diversity Program. Things you're doing are great, and it's going to carry forward for generations.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Pat Schlarbaum. And those were some of the voices of only a few of the people who are the stewards of our environment in the Midwest. Particularly in this case, they have been the network of people who've made it possible for us to once again enjoy the spectacle of having the ospreys among us. As I was leaving the event, I actually saw the ospreys sitting on poles by the driveway, and quite a bird to behold. Pat, last words?
Yeah, we have returned ospreys to Iowa. Let's keep them with us. They are our ambassadors for clean water, and may they fly freely from this generation to the next and the next forever.
Thank you, Pat, and enjoy your retirement. We'll see
what's next. More to come.
Okay. In April, the Iowa Senate gave final approval to a budget bill that blocks state funding to Planned Parenthood and other clinics that provide abortions. A Senate file 515 was approved on a 28-21 vote, with Republicans casting all of the yes votes. Planned Parenthood on Thursday announced it will close four of its 12 clinics in Iowa. And KHOI reporter Kay Puttock called Planned Parenthood of the Heartland and spoke with Rachel Lopez, their public relations manager, to find out how the legislation will impact Planned Parenthood and its ability to provide reproductive health care to Iowans.
We've faced defunding ever since the beginning of the legislative session. Lawmakers made it a top priority to attack reproductive health care in the state of Iowa, which we see trending across the nation, of course. It is devastating.
This will, of course, be particularly devastating for young, poor, and rural people. The four counties, or the four towns that are affected, Bettendorf, Burlington, Keokuk, and Sioux City.
That's correct. The patients who access those health centers are exactly as you described. They're young, they're poor, they're rural, and already face tremendous barriers to accessing health care. Closures actually had nothing to do with whether individual health centers actually provided abortions or not. Funding structure is really complex.
Yeah.
There is no public funding that goes toward abortion. Abortion care will not be impacted. In fact, considering the other restrictions that Iowans are facing in reproductive health care, it's possible that abortions will rise because people are facing ever greater barriers to birth control.
Eight other clinics, I believe, will remain open.
That is correct. And we certainly hope that people will find ways to access the care that they need at the remaining health center. People who are working two and three jobs and, you know, just getting time off to access the care that they need is really difficult. Not to mention, you know, many families, there may be only one vehicle, or maybe none at all, to get to the health center.
Because of the news coverage we've been getting, people hear Planned Parenthood and they think abortion. But I'm not sure how well people know about all the other services you provide.
You're absolutely correct. There's tremendous stigma and misrepresentation and misunderstanding of the services that Planned Parenthood provides in communities. So in the state of Iowa, while 2-3% of the care we provide is abortion services, the other 97-98%, depending on the year, is actually health care, which includes comprehensive birth control options, routine cancer screening, well woman, well person exam, LGBTQ health care, specific STD and STI testing and treatment. We also offer an HIV prevention medication program. And so that really makes up the majority of the services that Planned Parenthood of the Heartland provides. Yeah, it's really troubling that people do often have a misperception, a misconception of what Planned Parenthood does, and especially in communities where there are a lot of low-income residents. You know, 50% of our patient base are at or below the federal poverty line. That's 50% of our patients. Those are the people we're caring for. Other healthcare centers frequently just can't absorb those patients for financial and other reasons. And frankly, we are the leading experts in reproductive health care. We are known for non-judgmental, compassionate, expert health care. In addition to those services, we also provide the majority of sexual and reproductive education in the state of Iowa, sometimes in schools, but we provide educational services all the way up into senior care. And people are really not aware of those services that we provide, the value that we bring to community. You know, people don't think about seniors needing reproductive health care, but the fact is people are living longer, and we find increasingly people well into to older ages are sexually active, and really many have not ever accessed the kind of information that they need to keep themselves safe and healthy. And right. We provide not only that health care, but educational services for elderly people. Unfortunately, during this legislative session, have had bad news after bad news after bad news.
Yes.
Probably know we're currently litigating against the forced 72-hour wait period, which also increases barriers to the most vulnerable Iowans who are trying to access abortion care. The 20-week abortion ban also has been
enacted. Could you just explain that a bit? After they've made their initial visit, they have to wait 72 hours for the procedure?
That's exactly right, Kay. So they have to make an initial visit, and then there is a 72-hour wait period, and then additional medically unnecessary visit in order for women to access the abortion procedure. It's more expense, and just like the barriers that we discussed earlier,
right,
for low-income and rural people, it's incredibly burdensome. It's difficult enough for them to access the care just initially. But during the 2 hours that the law actually was in effect a couple of weeks ago, the women who were impacted were devastated. The one woman who needed to return to basic training and was terrified that her being forced to return for a second visit would alert her officers that she was pregnant and that she would be sidelined on a medical leave. She was looking at jeopardizing her military career. One woman had driven 7 hours. One woman said, you know, I have 3 jobs. I had to take off time to do this. And now I'm going to have to take off time again. I can't afford that. And the thing is, I don't want to share with people why it is that I'm taking the time off. It's a very private personal time. So, it really throws a tremendous roadblock in the way for women. It really is about lawmakers not trusting women to make their own healthcare decisions, which is outrageous.
This legislation, no abortions after 20 weeks.
Right.
This is... this is something that needs to be talked about, because I'm not sure if people understand the implications of that. First of all,
sure.
If people, I mean, these are not trivial abortions. If people waited 20 weeks, it's not because they didn't think of it before. It's because there's something very wrong with that pregnancy.
More often than not, that's the case, Kay. And this bill, first of all, as you mentioned, when people hear 20 weeks, they think, my gosh, that's significantly into a pregnancy. But what many people don't realize is that the most serious fetal anomalies frequently aren't detected until about 22 weeks. And a tremendous number of those are life-threatening, both to the fetus and possibly to the mother. But many of those mean that the fetus actually is not viable outside the womb. And so the fetus, if brought to term, will be birthed and will suffer and then die. So, in the case of fetal anomaly, it's just heartbreaking to hear the stories of women who have had to make that decision after 20 weeks on much wanted pregnancies. The other really cruel part of this particular law is that it makes no exceptions for rape or incest. And so when a woman has experienced sexual trauma, frequently, she is not in the emotional state to really process what has just happened to her, let alone process a resulting pregnancy, process how she feels about that and how she's going to manage that. Especially, again, getting back to access for the most vulnerable women, if you add poverty or distance on top of that, 20 weeks and the emotional toll of that sexual trauma could really mean the difference between a woman being able to access abortion and not being able to access abortion.
Well, this is certainly a devastating blow. Is there anything you want to add before we finish?
Okay, what I'd really like to emphasize in our communities is that we're still here. This is not the first set of challenges that Planned Parenthood has faced. Planned Parenthood as an organization, has been around for 100 years. We're going to be around for 100 more. We will continue to fight tenaciously, aggressively against any effort to remove reproductive health care rights. And we will continue fighting for women and men, families, to access the reproductive health care and the education that they need and they deserve.
Well, thank you for those heartening words at the end. I've been talking to Rachel Lopez, Public Relations Manager of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland.
Thank you so much, Kay.
And thanks to Kay for that interview with Planned Parenthood, one of many state-funded organizations looking at dramatic changes. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Kay also spoke this week with Mississippi Jake, a local musician who will perform at KHOI at our next Pantorium session. The Pantorium sessions are mini concerts held here at the radio station in the old Ames Pantorium building at 410 Douglas. The concerts are exactly an hour long from 7 to 8 p.m., long enough for us to put the concerts on the air. You are also invited to come in person to give our artists an audience. Yes. And the artists really appreciate it when you come down and support them in person. The concert is free of charge, and sometimes there's even refreshments to be had. The next session is on May 25th, this Thursday, from 7 to 8 p.m. And it's Mississippi Jake, so come on down, or at least be sure to tune in from 7 to 8 p.m. to KHOI to hear the concert live. Mississippi Jake came to KHOI last week and was interviewed by Evan Taylor and Kay Patak.
Mississippi Jake? Now, your name's really Jake Turner, right?
Correct, yes.
Why are you called Mississippi Jake?
I get that a lot. Since I was little, I've always been obsessed with the Mississippi River. Every time I've crossed over it on vacation or traveling here and there, it's just always captured me. It's just always been an obsession of mine. I did grow up in Missouri, not Mississippi.
In the Ozarks?
Down in the Ozarks. Okay. Beautiful Ozarks.
Did that have an influence on your music?
Yeah. Actually, when I was looking through songs to play for the session to come and for this, I was really thinking about what is the subject matter of my music. And half of it's about my weird childhood, and the other half is about growing up in the Ozarks. So apparently those two things have influenced me a lot.
Which I think is amazing, because place plays such a large role in community radio, and it does too in music. So having like a really strong connection to place, it's really important in forming identity.
Absolutely.
I guess you two know one another. Yes. Evan and Mississippi James.
Yeah, so. From the Ames music scene.
Yep.
I guess that's where I know most of my people in town anyway.
Would you like to start with a song that shows as you what you call your weird childhood or the Mississippi or
sure.
Where you grew up?
Sure. I'll do one that's one of the first folk songs that I wrote, and it's a story I made up about the Mississippi River, so seems fitting.
He saw the terrors of the trench, and he braved the mustard gas. The weapons of man couldn't cut his life short. The weapons of man couldn't cut his life short. He left the bleeding fields of France, and he turned in his army greens. He followed the river back home. He followed the river back home. Oh, Lord, let me drown in the Mississippi River like my father did in the spring of 23. He fought in the Great War and he lost in the Great River. Lord, let me drown in that mighty Mississippi. The current so violent, like a moving fluid riot, sent many a boatman to the docks up in the sky. Sent many a boatman to the docks up in the sky. I remember what he had to say as the water began to rise. He said, son, I've seen it all. He said, son, I've seen it all. Lord, let me drown in the Mississippi River like my father did in the spring of 23. He fought in the Great War and he lost in the Great River. Lord, let me drown in that mighty Mississippi. Lord, let me drown in the Mississippi River like my father did in the spring of 23. He fought in the Great War and he lost in the Great River. Lord, let me drown in that mighty Mississippi.
That's a really imaginary person. That's
correct. Yeah. Yeah, my dad's, he's fine. He's good.
He wouldn't is the suggestion this person committed suicide in the river? Or?
It's more of accepting the area that you grow up in. So some of where I pulled that song from, my grandma down in the Ozarks, she worked the garden every year. This is not a backyard garden. She had six kids and it was not a small garden. And so she grew enough food for the family. And then as they all started having kids, she just kept growing more and more. And so for the most part, I'd never had corn or green beans frozen from the store because we had them. But along with that is my grandma had a very hunched back because mm-hmm. she spent all of her life working
bent
the
over
land.
In the
yes.
Yeah.
The land does that to you. It's not nice land down there. It's not gentle land. It's really rocky. You have to put a lot of effort into it. She didn't have a problem with that. I think for her it was kind of a badge of honor of this shows the work that I put in. So with that song, it's a story about a man who saw his dad on the river and growing up and living by it, you live off of it. And his father winds up drowning in a flood, and it's him kind of understanding, I'm from the river. So if I wind up dying in the river at some point, it's pretty fitting. And so it's kind of along those lines.
Especially the anecdote about the hunchback, I think it also fits in with a lot of your ethos as a folk artist as well. You know, you have that sort of working man's folk sort of moniker that's added onto your style, I guess, and all of that. And the hunchback, the calluses, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very blue-collar way of looking at things and dealing with life as it comes to you.
Yeah, I think it's easy to take things that happen to you and scars that are left and take them as, oh, that was an accident, that was something that was terrible that happened, or I earned that.
Yeah.
If I fall off a ladder at work, I'm not going to be really happy about it at the moment, but I have a job and I work hard at it. And so it's just that badge of honor.
Right. If that puts food on the table, and in your grandmother's case, very literally, does,
yeah.
then, you know, that's okay. You
yeah.
know, like you said, you earned it. You know?
Sure.
Oh, do you want to give us another song?
Sure. Then? I'll tell you a little bit about it, too. So, weird childhood. I was adopted when I was 3. And 2 years ago, I was on Facebook. I saw a picture of a woman holding a sign that said, I'm looking for my son, Casey Joe Collins. He was born April 27th, 1987. As it turns out, that was my birth name, and that's my birthday. There's my mom on Facebook looking for me. And so, got to meet my brother. And one of the things that he told me was, I've been looking for you this whole time. I knew you were out there. He's older than me. So he had a few more memories. So after we reconnected and things were going really well, I wrote a song about it because we'd shared a lot of experiences completely separate from each other that were really similar. There was a lot of time sending each other text messages like, hey, do you like onions? Because I love onions. You know, I love onions, you know. It was just, I don't know. It was just a way for me to say, here's me and here's my thoughts on this really weird situation. So it's called DFS. Here now, we won't walk alone.
think we're doing all right. For being wards of the state, I think we're doing all right. We've made our own fate. Jumped on a train, I wondered if you're doing the same. I slept on the streets, not sure if you'd even know my name. I've been hungry and I prayed that you'd find a feast. I've been tired, I prayed you'd find. I think we're doing alright for being wards of the state. I think we're doing alright. We've made our own fate.
But that is, that, so that's a true one. Though. That's
absolutely true, yeah.
Now, what is DFS? I'm...
Department of Family Services.
Okay, I should have known that. Yeah. And how did it go on afterwards? Did you get to meet your mother as well?
Yes. Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. I actually spent last Thanksgiving with them, so that was really fun. And then last 4th of July, we were standing in my brother's backyard shooting fireworks in Missouri because you can legally do that. And I realized I'm shooting fireworks with my brother. I never thought I would say that in my entire life. You know, there's no reason I would think that.
Oh, man, you're making me take all of my summer memories for granted. I mean, you know, that was just kind of commonplace for me. So having that realization must have been awesome.
Yeah. No, it was, and we have a lot of those moments. We'd be sitting around playing video games. I'm like, all right, it only took 29 years, but I still get to play video games with my brother. And so that's really cool. And it's been a new experience. I mean, I've got a 2.5-year-old, and he was the first biological family member that I'd had until... you know, beating the rest of the family now recently. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So, yeah, I mean, that brings out a lot of different things, and most people know their blood relatives. And
now, this grandmother you mentioned, she's not your blood grandmother. Nope. She's your adoptive grandmother.
Yeah, yep.
Did the two families meet and get on?
So my dad, who adopted me, he's met mom, and, uh-huh. and he's met the siblings, and so it's... figure out how that all works together and merging uh-huh. lives and figuring out new relationships, and it's been a blast and uh-huh. and gone a whole lot better than I would have ever imagined. You know, that's no idea what you're getting into at that moment, but it's been amazing.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah. Now I understand you're in the middle, or you're just finishing making a second album.
Yes. So I've actually got two in the works that I got to figure out which one to go first, and I think I've figured it out. I've got a backing band that I use occasionally. So we have a fiddle player, a banjo player, a mandolin, and upright bass. And so we were working on another bluegrass-esque album, and then I kind of put the brakes on that and started doing more of a solo album, trying to do as many instruments that I can do. Basically, if I can't do it, it won't be on there, theoretically. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it sounds as we go through it. But there was just a string of songs that came out, and I thought, I'm going to put those on a record. And so... we're in the works of doing that, and hopefully that'll be out early summer.
So neither of these albums have been released yet?
Not yet. I've got one that's already out, but I've got two in the works.
Oh, I see. Two more, so it'll be the third one. Okay, I see. And just it's a question of deciding which one should go
first.
Yes,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
And you've made a decision about that.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do a shorter solo record that's going to be first, and should be quicker to get out than the full band record, and so get some more new music out there.
Okay. Well, as I said, I'm a little bit, I don't want to sort of be a spoiler for the concert. I you know, everyone should come to the concert. But maybe we can think of something else to sort of, without spoiling things for Thursday night, to tempt them.
I don't know. I did give away the biological family thing. That's a big one, but... there's plenty of other stories to go along with that. So hopefully people will just want to hear the rest.
Ah, good. Okay. Well, maybe, yeah, Evan.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, we'll just leave them a cliffhanger. You know, who knows what happens next?
That's
nobody.
That's right.
We'll just end with music then, but let's just remind people about the Plantorium concert, which will be here and will be Jake, Mississippi Jake, Thursday, May the 25th from 7 till 8.
And arrive early if at all possible. We'd love to have the house packed before Jake starts performing.
Yeah, and it does feel different to have a big live audience.
Sure. So.
Come on Thursday to hear more of Jake, but we'll give it a little small taste here.
All right, this is one I wrote about my son. So
you can clear a forest with an axe, and you can swim up the mighty Mississippi. Don't go it alone. It's not by your will that you build a home. You can reach for the stars above. Don't leave your brother below. Walk with him down the lonesome road. It's not his burden to bear alone. And it's not by your hand, it's by grace alone. And it's not by your hand, it's by grace alone. Home, home. Don't ever dance with the devil.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. That was Mississippi Jake, who will perform at KHOI at 410 Douglas this Thursday, May 25th from 7 to 8. The concert is free of charge. Please join us. If you can't, tune in to KHOI from 7 to 8 p.m. so you can actually hear him live on the air as he's performing here at the station. Earlier in the show, we heard from our nature reporter, Pat Schlarbaum. And Pat, thank you for joining us this morning and giving us your comments. And Pat, and only some of the many other people who have collaborated with him were heard today on the show to bring back wildlife to our area. We also heard from Rachel Lopez, Public Relations Manager for Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, speaking about their funding cuts from the Iowa legislature. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. And the show is also archived on the homepage. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard original music of Mississippi Jake and Iowa's drumming music about the Osprey. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you, so come in and join the Local Talk team. We are now airing Democracy Now! From 8 to 9 a.m., Morning Masterpieces will return at 9 a.m. We've made this change to provide you with the latest news in the most timely fashion possible. And these days, the news is happening fast. So let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878. Email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to our contact page at khoifm.org. So stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour at 8 o'clock. And please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. Thank you.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.
This spring, KHOI asked you, our loyal listeners, to help us raise money toward our operations expenses. Thanks to your generosity and that of several premier donors who established a matching grant, we were able to exceed our fundraising goal. Because of your support, we are able to continue serving Central Iowa through the broadcast of community ideas and values for the foreseeable future. If you would still like to contribute to KHOI, give us a call at 515-292-2878 or visit us online at khoifm.org and click the donate button. Thank you again for making KHOI a reality in the heart of Iowa, and we'll see you again on the radio.